CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor. FedGov Today. My colleague Francis Rose is the host of FedGov Today, reporting on the federal government, their massive workforce, and what's underway right now is using the skills of artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and also the inquisitiveness of government about how can we do our job better for the American people. We're going to speak to, first, the National Cybersecurity Strategy in place, in development, and then we'll speak to the troubled VA of these decades. Decades and decades. But now, Francis, I begin with your conversation with Steve Ryan, the founder and CEO of Trinity Cyber. You know I'm a sucker for the special language that government uses. Steve is developing a language here that I'm going to guess echoes the language that is used inside cybersecurity and the federal government. The big question is, how bad is it? And I take it from Steve that it's really bad, that the attacks are daily, constantly, and they come from the same bad actors out there, we could name them, and that they're weighed down in trying to react. Good evening to you, Francis.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me on the program. In the context of all of those things that you just described, yes, I would suggest that Steve believes, and that other cybersecurity leaders across the departments and agencies, the federal government and industry that serves the federal government, believe that the situation is very bad. In the context of the actual exfiltration of information and data, the hacking, that's more complicated and that's more difficult to try to determine. But Steve has an interesting position to be able to watch all of this because he's not just founder and CEO of this company. He's also the former deputy director of the Threat Operations Center at the National Security Agency. So he's seen this from the inside, too, and has a really unique, I think, understanding of who the threat actors are, the way that the threat is evolving over time, and the direction in which that evolution can go, because I don't think anybody thinks that the cyber threat is going to be static over time, but being able to try to determine which direction at least to chase it has been one of the challenges that both industry and government have seen in Washington, John.
A big number to me, 30% of the alarms are false positives.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend all their time reacting to the alarms. Now, if I heard Steve correctly, he wants to move from reactive to proactive. Did you hear that, Francis?
Yeah, and that's been kind of the desired end state for, as long as I've been covering this stuff in the federal government. 15, 17 years ago, I remember asking people in the cyber realm, will we ever get to a point where we can be proactive rather than reactive? And the hope has always kind of been over the horizon. And my takeaway from this conversation is that that horizon is at least getting closer and closer as people can start to use tools like artificial intelligence and machine learning to anticipate where the threats might come from and what the kinds of threats might be. And as I said a moment ago, that evolution is really going to be determinative in whatever success the federal government has and industry has in the cyber realm. I will say that what the industry people like Steve tell me, and this was not from him directly, but folks of his ilk have been telling me, is that the challenges that the government's facing in cybersecurity are not really that much different than the challenges that the banking industry and the defense industrial base and other very high profile companies and organizations and sectors in the private sector has, especially the ones that have huge deposits of personally identifiable information and those that move tremendous amounts of money. It's the old saw about why Al Capone robbed banks, because I think it was Al Capone, because that's where the money is. And in this case, it's where the data, the money, and the PII are. That's where the hackers are going. And that's why trying to get proactive instead of continuing to be reactive is potentially a turning point in the cyber fight.
The Veterans Affairs Department, our old stomping grounds, Francis, back
yes.
in the days before AI, before any of these magic buttons that are now being pushed, the VA was in a tailspin, and it had been for decades. You helped me understand that what was happening, this is the Obama administration, first term, I believe, that was representative of what had been happening for 50 or 60 or years, all the way back to the veterans coming back from the first war. However, you bring on your program Jason Thomas, Chief of Staff of the Veterans Experience Office. What is that, and what is the good news about VA, Francis?
Well, the Veterans Experience Office was established in the wake of the troubles that you talked about, that you referred to a moment ago, and that we talked about extensively on your show. Scheduling problems, problems with accessibility to care, just about everything you can name a name. There was some kind of challenge within the VA regarding veterans getting care. And what seems to have come out of that as a positive is VA hyper-focused at the end of the Obama administration and the beginning of the Trump administration on the fact that it existed to serve veterans. And there's no point to them being there if the veterans were not being served. And so the Veterans Experience Office came about as a result of that effort. And the VEO exists primarily for two things. VEO exists to evaluate and formulate policy and assist with implementation throughout the entire agency to help the veteran get what he or she is supposed to get from the VA. And it doesn't matter if it's health care coming from the Veterans Health Administration, or if it's some benefit coming from the Veterans Benefits Administration, or if it's something to do with a final resting place as part of the National Cemetery Administration, which are the three main components of the VA. The Veterans Experience Office exists to make VA transparent to the veteran who's seeking those services, so that that veteran doesn't know, or it doesn't matter to that vet whether they're getting a service from one part of the VA or another part. Now, what VEO has done that I think is really noteworthy compared to other agencies across government is they've applied those same principles to the experience that their own employees have, because a lot of employees, also as a result of the chain of events that you referred to a few minutes ago, expressed that working in the VA wasn't much greater for them than some of the experiences veterans were having being served by VA. And so they've turned those policies and procedures inward. And they've even created things like employee experience journeys, excuse me, to map how an employee's career might go throughout the VA. And so the byproduct of all of it, one of the byproducts of all of these, is VA's all-employee survey. And the gentleman that joined me talked about the fact that the numbers that they're getting from the all-employee survey indicate that people are more engaged in their work at VA, they like it better, and they're, by the data at least, staying at VA longer than they have in the past. And that leads him and others inside VA to believe that they are doing the right things as far as serving both their employees and the vets who are their clients.
Steve Ryan for the National Cybersecurity Strategy and Jason Thomas for the Veterans Affairs Department. And better future for Veterans Affairs, certainly. And the attacks are constant on the U.S. Francis Rose, FedGov Today, a podcast twice a week, and a TV show on Sunday morning in the nation's capital. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.